You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
So yesterday is my day off, and I like to watch a movie if I can. And I watched this movie yesterday that kind of messed with me. It was a simple story about a man just trying to deal with his life and the inevitable consequences of his choices on his family. Pretty straightforward stuff. But I just kept thinking about it all day long. It bugged me at times, but it also would bring up various emotions in me. Someone told me a long time ago that when you watch a film or you read a story that moves you in some way, pay attention to that. Like, try to dig deeper. Try to ask yourself, what emotions is that drawing up in me, and why? Because often when something moves you, it can reveal something about you, about your life. It can shed light on various situations in your life. The reason I tell you that is because we're wrapping up a story today. Now, if you've been with us, you know that we're doing a little series in Proverbs. And if you've been reading through the Proverbs, the last thing you would think of when you think of the Proverbs is a story. Like, isn't this just like a random collection of sayings? Well, yeah, on one hand, it is a collection of wise sayings. But in another way, if you zoom way out and look at the thing as a whole, you can see a drama unfolding. The story begins in chapter 1 with a father's exhortation to his son to pursue wisdom. And the father is King Solomon. And you'll remember, Solomon is the guy that when God told him, hey, you can ask for anything you want, he asked for wisdom, a heart of wisdom. And so here's a man who understands the importance of wisdom and who desperately wants his son to get wisdom. But he also knows that nobody just kind of drifts into wisdom. They have to chase it intentionally. And nobody's going to chase something intentionally unless they're motivated to do so. They have to feel the need. And so in an attempt to make his son feel the need, he uses language and imagery to get his attention. One of the things he does, the main thing he does in this regard to get his son's attention, is he presents him with the choice between two women. It's like the very first episode of The Bachelor. Right? There is, just kidding, that's a terrible show. You shouldn't watch that. All right, there's Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly. And you see a lot about these two women in the first 9 chapters of the book. And all of the language around them that describes them is very intimate language. It's put in terms of marriage and of adultery. And so about Lady Wisdom, he says, do not forsake her. That's like marriage covenant language. And she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. Lady Folly is talked about as the forbidden woman and the adulteress. She has smooth words that end up leaving a bitter taste in your mouth. She has seductive eyes that lure you into her house, but then her house sinks down into death and you can't get out. Both of these women call out to the king's son, and he has to choose one of them. And there's some suspense about which he will choose. Now, I know the choice seems obvious, but don't lose sight of the fact that we're talking about a young man here. And young men do not always make the obvious choice. They are beset with folly and insecurity and fear and pride and temptation on every front. And so there's some suspense around, will he choose Lady Wisdom or Lady Folly? Every parent knows the feeling of this suspense because we try to lay out for our children wisdom and then we just feel helpless. We just pray and hope that they make the right choice. It's awful. And that's the tension in this story. The book envisions a marriage between its readership and Lady Wisdom. And so marriage becomes a metaphor in the book of wisdom's embrace. Give yourself to her and she will give herself to you. Marry her and she'll make you happy. That's the premise of the story. The story begins with Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, but as we come to the end in chapter 31, where the language of marriage ramps up again, there is only one woman there. It is the excellent wife, and Lady Wisdom has become incarnate in this excellent wife. That's the resolution. He chose Lady Wisdom. And she has brought into his life the fruition of all of the goodness of wisdom that has been taught in this book. She's made him a very happy man. It's a happy ending to the story. Now, the story alerts us to two things right off the bat. The first one is this. This is not merely, Proverbs 31 is not merely a checklist of kind of like what every man should be looking for in a woman. And you've probably heard it taught that way before, and I think there are good intentions in that, but if you've heard it taught that way, my guess is that probably wasn't a positive experience for you. Because, like, who can measure up to this woman? Did you hear it? If it becomes a checklist, then for women it's, like, very burdensome. Like, my goodness, how could I possibly do and be all these things? Not to mention, what kind of man would be worthy of such a woman? That often gets overlooked in those talks. The second thing is that this chapter isn't primarily about married women. It's not even just about women. This text has something to say to all of us. There are unique things for women to gain from Proverbs 31, but there are layers of instruction and application for men and women, single and married. The point is, we should all be moved by this story. The story reminds us that Lady Folly tempts us all. We have all experienced the regret and the anxiety of bad decisions and sinful actions and what might become of those things. Lady Folly is on every front for all of us. But even so, Lady Folly is not the heroine of the story. The heroine of the story is Lady Wisdom. In Proverbs 31, she emerges triumphantly with strength and with glory. It's a happy ending that stirs us, that moves us. And so we should ask the question, why does that move us? Why does this story move us? Well, here's the first thing. I'm going to give you two reasons. One, it moves us because it gives us a picture of the kind of life that we all want. And secondly, it moves us because it is a wonderful celebration of the image of God in women. So let's talk about those two things. First, this chapter, if you just zoom way out and think of it as Lady Wisdom incarnate, an example of wisdom to all, shows us the kind of life we all want, which is a life where we see wisdom in action. One of the things this chapter does is it brings all of the teachings about wisdom. I mean, we've been talking about how to deal with anger, and we've been talking about our words, we've been talking about diligence and patience and all of these things, and all of that is embodied in the woman of Proverbs 31. She is wisdom in action, and she teaches us a lot of things, but if I were going to get to the heart of it, the thing that is so compelling to me about her is how focused and how committed she is to the things that matter most. This is a very common theme in our stories of our day, right? How many films and how many shows and stories have you read about people chasing success and recognition and in the process of doing so end up neglecting the things that matter most? Namely, the people and the responsibilities that are right in front of them. How many stories have we seen of people who are just fighting for some control of their little world and some security and in the process of doing so miss out. They isolate themselves and miss out on all of the opportunities to love and to be loved. This story reminds us that what matters most is the importance and the glory of the things that are right in front of us. Wisdom is expressed in tangible action in everyday life. Like, if you're looking to understand what wisdom is, you will find it in tangible actions in people's everyday lives, the normal stuff. Notice the various contexts of this poem in Proverbs 31. If you don't have it open, get it open. We're going to walk through, I'm going to jump around to different verses. It'd be good for you to see it. The various contexts we see wisdom in action here are at home and at work and in community. These are the arenas of everyday life. And I want you to see how she does this and what beauty and blessing it brings to everyone who's connected to her. We'll begin toward the end. Verse 27 just captures the wisdom in action at home, which is really throughout the poem. Verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. And so we see that wisdom is busy at home in all of the right ways, taking care of her family and her household. And so when you see the word household in here, it's different than just her immediate family. These are her servants and employees. And I say that just to give you some relief. How in the world does one woman do all of this? She doesn't. She got people working for her, all right? So take a deep breath. Too often, we are focused on living well in the public arenas of life, and we lose sight of the importance and the glory of what is right in front of us in our homes. Think about the environment and the mood of your home, just where you live. Think about the relationships in your home, whether it's roommates or siblings, spouses or children or parents. Think about the ways in which your home can be used for hospitality and how other people experience your home. This text reminds us that there is life-giving possibilities right in front of you at home. And wisdom offers herself to you in your home. Embrace her there. We see wisdom in action at work. Notice all of the verbs in this passage. They are just active, and most of the descriptions have to do with this woman's work. Verse 13, she seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. So this isn't just about diligent work, it's about skillful work. Verse 14, she's like the ships of the merchant, that she brings her food from afar. So she is being compared to the merchant ships that would export and import goods. It is captioning her vision for industry and for entrepreneurship and for, did I already say industry? That's the other word I'm looking for, and I already said it. So, vision for industry. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. And so there's careful planning in view, strategic investment. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Wisdom understands the value of things, sets a good price, makes a profit. This is wisdom in action at work. Do you ever think about how God's wisdom could impact your work, whether at home or in the marketplace? Like, do you ever think about what if Jesus had your job? Whether you're an engineer or an artist or anything in between, because I think those are the extremes. Have you thought about, like, have you asked Jesus specific things about, like, the software you're trying to code? But don't you imagine that he knows about that? Like, if you don't pray about your work, what you're communicating is that God probably doesn't know about this. When the reality is that if Jesus had your job, he would be more than a little bit better at it than you. And so wisdom offers herself. God offers himself to you in your workplace. Embrace him there. Finally, in community, verse 20, she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The prosperity that wisdom brings to our lives is never meant to turn in on self. It's always meant for the good of the community, particularly the needy and the poor among you. Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. And the gates is just the place of like public office. And so here is just saying that in the most public arenas, wisdom offers herself to you. Embrace her there. This poem is highlighting the importance and the glory of what's right in front of us. The kind of life we want is a life where we see wisdom in tangible action in everyday life. I went to a film screening recently because that's how important I am. And it was about a guy, and it was about this one particular thing that he was known for. And so everybody was coming expecting to just like learn a bunch about that. And that was there. But then it kind of went into the whole scope of his life, and it was amazing. To be honest with you, it was overwhelming. I mean, I was like, wow, I am overwhelmed by the reach and the influence of this man's life. But it was also inspiring. When I began to reflect on it, I started to think, You know, what made him so great is that he wasn't aiming at being great. He wasn't trying to have an incredible scope and reach. What you learn from the movie is that at every point, wherever he lived and whatever he was doing, he was just really focused and committed on what was right in front of him. And God, in his grace, took all of those little decisions and choices from everyday life and compiled it into this really wonderful, meaningful, purposeful, beautiful life. If you want to be successful, might I just suggest that you focus on what's right in front of you? Take one thing at a time, be faithful with it, express wisdom in tangible actions, and see what God would produce from that. That's the kind of life we want. So this story, first of all, shows us the life we want. But second, it celebrates the image of God in women. And so, whereas the woman in Proverbs 31 is an example of wisdom and action, it is also a celebration of a particular woman. You'll see in verse 10, it calls her a valiant woman, a woman of valor. Now, let me back up and say this. The Proverbs, if you read through it, you'll see it is full of feminine imagery and language. And that's important. The fact that Lady Wisdom is a lady and the fact that the culmination of the story is in this excellent wife is important to us. At the very least, it just reminds us of the image of God in both men and women. In Genesis 1, this is how it all began. God said, "Let us, the Trinity, make man in our image, after our likeness." That word is just mankind. "Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And so God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. The image of God is expressed and reflected in the plurality of male and female. Now there's a lot of gender hostility in our culture. There's a lot of gender tension in the church and in our church, I think. And let me just say, I think we would do well to resist the currents of hostility and embrace and celebrate both the image of God in men and in women alike together. I don't think God's intention was for us to compete with one another. I think that was the enemy's intention. And so we'd do well to resist that. This chapter is a celebration of the image of God in women. And it celebrates this particular woman, a valiant woman, a woman of valor, which is a warrior term. And so let's look at it. Now, again, if you read this as a checklist, you're going to be very discouraged. First of all, the fact that she's married and has children right off the bat will discourage many of you. Because you'd be like, well, if this is what it means to be the perfect woman, okay, she's married, she has kids, I'm already out. Doesn't matter. No, that's just this woman's particular context. She is a wife and a mother. But if you think of it as a checklist, you'll miss the point that any woman can be a woman of valor. Along those lines, I should just say, and maybe this is just jumping in too deep of waters, but this passage and this church doesn't value married women over single women or vice versa. I think both are blessed and celebrated in the scriptures. And we bless and celebrate both as a means towards serving and worshiping God, which is really the goal of your life. The goal of your life isn't to be married or to not be married, whatever the case is. The goal of your life is to serve and worship God with everything you've got. And some people do that as married people, and some people do that as single people. If you read this as a checklist, you'll miss the opportunity and the hope that it offers. Second, if you read it as a checklist, you'll be discouraged because, again, who could possibly measure up? Nobody can be all of these things at any given moment. Not even the woman in this poem is all of these things at any given moment. And the reason I say that is because this isn't like a snapshot of her life. This is a poem that celebrates the totality of her life. This is like watching a Lifetime Achievement Award or like hearing a eulogy. So this poem is an acrostic. Take all the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and each line begins with one of those letters. And that's important because the form tells us he isn't trying to like build a linear argument about perfect womanhood. He's just trying to string together some characteristics and highlights of this woman's life and give her praise. Another hint is that all of the verbs that I mentioned, even though they're translated in the present tense, they're actually almost all past tense. She did all these things. And she didn't do them all at the same time, and she wasn't buying fields and planting vineyards like every day. Maybe she did that once, and that's a highlight. All right? So don't get overwhelmed by the scope of it. This is a man looking back on a wise woman's life and celebrating her. I was at a funeral a couple years ago, and I knew the guy. I knew he wasn't perfect, but they didn't talk about that stuff at the funeral. They talked about all of the wonderful things that he believed and stood for and did in people's lives, and it was really awesome. I wasn't bitter because they didn't mention the failures. I wasn't even crushed by the hearing all of the good things piled up at once, because I knew it was a totality. It was a celebration. And so I could hear all of that and not be crushed, because I could be inspired by the way that God would just use all the little choices in this man's life to produce such a wonderful celebration. That's how we're to read this. Okay, so what is being celebrated in this woman's life? What is so moving here? Well, if I had to get to the heart of it again, the thing that is compelling to me is the attention that this poem pays to her hands. You're just going to see many references to her hands. Our culture tends to focus on lots of other body parts of women and not her hands. But this poem highlights and draws attention to the work of her hands. They're a symbol of her creativity and her resourcefulness and her productivity. Look at verse 13 again. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. And so the emphasis here is not just that she does work, but it's her attitude in her work. It's done with delight and great joy and pleasure. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. This woman is a wise steward of all the things that God has given her. She's reinvesting to make a profit on what God has given her. Verse 17, she dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. No hands, but arms. The image here is that she girds her loins, which is like kind of a battle imagery. I mean, so men would wear robes, and when they had to get to work or go to battle, they would pull up the robes so they could run and work. So this is an imagery of working hard. She readies herself for hard work, and through hard work, she gets stronger. Verse 19, she puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle, diligent and skillful work. Verse 20, she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. So she's generous. She cares for the poor. What's so great about verse 19 and 20 coming back to back is captured by one commentator I read this week. He said, so the hands that grasp to produce open wide to provide. She works hard for the good of others. Finally, in verse 31, the poem ends by saying, give her the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Give her what's her due her. Celebrate this wise and valiant woman. She is far more precious than jewels. There's been a lot written about the struggles of women in the workplace in our country, namely to be recognized and to be promoted and to be paid according to the work, you know, in the same way men are. And I think we're seeing a lot of progress in recent years on this front, but there's a lot of progress still to be made. Here's what I want you to hear, women, that this poem celebrates the work of your hands. And I want to take a moment as a church to celebrate the work of your hands. I see your creativity and your resourcefulness, your industry, your ingenuity, your entrepreneurship. I can't say that word, but you know what I'm talking about. I see it, and we all see it. Women in this church are making huge impacts in the home and in the marketplace throughout our city, and we celebrate it. I see it in the church as well. I am so grateful for the women of our church and the way that God uses your gifts to build up our body in health. And listen, I know that we're not perfect in this way. I know that culturally, we may have these values of men and women partnering together in full force for the kingdom of God. And I know that there's a gap between those aspirations and what's happening in reality. I get it. And we're trying to figure out what all the issues are. But let me just assure you that this is front and center on our minds. We want to bring our desires for men and women working together for the health of the body and the expanse of the kingdom in this church. We're doing that together. Women in our culture have been so objectified that it has twisted the idea of what beauty is. We've exploited the natural beauty of women, and in doing so, we've reduced beauty just to the physical form of her body. And so, whether you know it or not, women in our culture have just become conditioned to using the external appearances of their life to gain favor or attention in this world. It's awful. When I say appearance, and I think when the Bible talks about appearances, it means more than just your body. It's also the words and the looks and the things that you put out there to try to get attention or approval or to gain something. That's what's going on in verse 30, this word charm. Charm is about doing something to get favorable reaction or to feel better about yourself. And charm's deceitful because what often feels good in the moment ends up feeling terrible. And charm's deceitful because often you have to put something out there to get something that covers up the true you. And it's dehumanizing. It says beauty is in vain. Beauty's not worthless. That's not what that means. It just means it's inferior to that which lasts. External appearances don't last. Like if you build your happiness on the way that you look, or men, if you build your happiness on the way that your woman looks, that happiness won't last. It's in vain. What does last, and what actually becomes increasingly beautiful over time, is the confidence and character of a godly woman. Verse 25, strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. That is a great verse. She clothes herself in strength and in dignity because her confidence is not based upon what other people are saying about her or how other people are looking at her. Her confidence is based upon who she is in Christ, and she clothes herself with his strength and dignity. And because she is so rooted in him, so secure in him, she looks at the days to come, all of the anxieties and all of the fears and all of the threats out there, and she laughs. What can they do to her? Verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Women, this is who God made you to be. Confident and secure in him. Bold and kind because you care so much about the people around you. Let's end by zooming way out again. I want you to remember that this isn't just about a young man finding a wife or just about what women aspire to be. It is those things, but it's more than that. This is about all of us getting wisdom. And the Apostle Paul tells us what that really means. It means getting Jesus. In him, Paul says, are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. To get wisdom is to get Jesus. This poem, even though it's not mentioned explicitly, is really about Jesus. He is both the valiant woman and the royal prince. Jesus is the valiant woman because he is the embodiment, the true embodiment of perfected wisdom. Look at the way that he lives his life. In his character, look at the way that he gives of himself for the people around him, especially the poor and needy. This poem points us to Jesus, tells us to seek and embrace him because he is the wisdom of God. Secondly, Jesus is the royal prince. That's what the son in the Proverbs is, right? He's the son of King Solomon. He's a royal prince and he's looking for a princess. This is an aristocratic couple. That explains their affluence and their influence. This is a prince and a princess. God sent his son into the world as a divine prince, looking, seeking a bride. And the point is not that the bride, the church, would be so good and so wise that he would choose her. The point is that through his choosing, he would make her so good and so wise. In the language of Ephesians 5, the point is that Jesus gave himself up for us that he might sanctify us, having cleansed us with the washing of water with his word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such things, so that she might be holy and without blemish. This is where our story is taking us. There will be a day where King Jesus will praise us in the gates, present us without spot or blemish. That, for all who hope in him, is our happy ending. Let's give thanks.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.